Welcome to Modcast, a civilization podcast focused on modding.
Kenneth Borland.
Tony Keel.
Peter Steenbeck.
Bauta Snagas.
With guest co-host, Aphoris.
Better late than never, but we just heard about this new thing called Civ 5, and we're all pretty excited about it, and we're probably going to talk a lot about that this episode. But also, it is our 42nd episode, so we'll go into that more soon. And, well, how's everyone doing?
Awesome.
Cup.
Pretty good.
By the time this episode comes out, it'll be 6 months later, so who knows how we feel then.
Welcome to Modcast episode 42. Today, we are joined with Kenneth, Impaler WRG Furland.
Greetings, mortals.
Wilder, Locutus, Snyders.
Hello.
Peter, Maniac, Steenbeka.
Greetings, immortals.
And me, Tony, Garrett Tzaka, Kiel Hello, with our very special first-time guest co-host, Cameron Aphoris McAvoy.
McAvoy. McAvoy.
McAvoy.
Woo-hoo.
And yay, woo-hoo.
Told you nobody could pronounce the name right.
But no, we have a lot of stuff today. We have probably, you know, too much stuff, or maybe too little. I'm not sure. It's one or the other. But it's also, not only is our first official we heard about Civ 5 episode, but it's also our official Douglas Adams episode, because we're at episode 42, which is a big milestone for us.
Yes, this episode is the answer to life, the universe, and Civ 5.
Yes, yes. And we're mostly harmless, but, I don't know.
Civ 5 is like a new universe. The end of our current universe is, you know, ending the Civ 4 universe. Okay. That didn't come out well.
Yes, in a way.
It's okay. We're all a little overly nerded. I know Ken...
Modcast is the restaurant at the end of the universe?
We're the Modcast at the end of Civilization 4.
Oh, yeah, that is true. The Civ 4 universe.
A new dawn.
Yes, but a new universe is opening up for us. Are being constructed inside of another planet.
With Megarithia to help along with the process, along with Phyrexis.
Speaking of building universes, the news out about Civ 5 so far seems to indicate that it's going to have even better moddability than Civilization 4.
We're going to have a lot of fun today. And you know what? If you're just listening to the show and you're like, okay, these guys are retarded, well, that's okay, because you're right. So
you are probably right.
Anyways, so long, and thanks for all the fish.
Wait, that's too early.
Now, I totally stole your line.
Yes. I hate you.
Today in the Modern Spotlight, we look at the Rise of Mankind mod, A New Dawn, by Aphoris, and we have a Modcast exclusive gossip on Civ 5.
Modding Spotlight, where we interview and talk about modders and what they do in the Civ community.
All right. Now, Cameron... You, how long have you been in the Civ community? Because I think you've been here for a bit, haven't you?
Yeah, I signed up for CSP back in 2007, but I hadn't really done anything until last summer.
Oh, yeah?
Summers are a very productive period.
Yeah.
Indeed.
Modding.
Well,
can you continue?
I asked you to come on the show the other day while we were at We Play Civ, and I was glad you said you'd come on and do it, and... I know you had you've had some conversations with Ken, and you've been working on a mod a whole bunch. What is the name of this mod?
Well, it's It's an expansion to the mod Last Mankind. It's Last Mankind: A New Dawn,
mm-hmm.
and adds on to what is already one of the largest mods on CFC. It encompasses. It makes the most changes to the early game. It adds lots of new features. It's a huge conglomeration of the best features from the Civilization modding community.
Really?
Basically.
Some people.
I believe you called it a kitchen sink mod, and you expressed that as you like philosophy to include a lot of content in mods.
Yeah. It's a lot of people don't like kitchen sink mods, but kitchen sink mods are the best kind of mod and the most popular mod, and they do the most changes to the game because Civilization 4 just it's so pale compared to any kitchen sink mod out there, like Fall from Heaven or Rise of Mankind or even Rise and Fall of Civilization.
Yeah.
So
and tell us a little bit about the mod that you modded. You said the Rise of Mankind. Have we covered that one?
I don't think so.
Well, tell us a little bit about that mod.
Rise of Mankind. It's a total overhaul of Civilization 4. It's like four times the content of the original game. It's filled in all of like the missing eras, like the pre-industrial age, before the ancient era a little bit. So you have to like research text before you can see any resources, basically.
Oh, so it actually substantially increases the tech tree size.
It has like 200.
Oh yeah, the tech tree is about four times longer.
Wow.
So you're looking at more than 1,000 turns here to play a game?
Oh yeah, well it's recommended for marathon speed, so you're about 3,000 turn game.
And those are the ones that take all week.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a week if you're playing like 5-6 hours after you come home every day.
Lots of half year for me.
Yeah, try more like a month.
Oh yeah, well marathon. I pulled back on marathon a little bit when I was playing Planetfall. So.
Wait, you're playing Planetfall with or without marathon?
I've done both with Planetfall.
Okay, I recommend without because I.
Yeah, I actually went to normal for Planetfall. So, but anyways.
Yeah. So Rise of Mankind is just a complete overhaul of Civilization 4. It has most of the original content from Civilization 4, but a lot more addition to, a lot more nuances. It's pretty overwhelming to first-time players.
But doesn't become the content repetitive after a while if you just add more quantity to it? That's basically the thing I wonder most about.
Yeah,
about kitchen sink mods.
Yeah, that is a huge problem, which is why I spent a lot of effort making sure that buildings aren't just generic building 1,
yeah.
Generic building 2, generic building 3, and make sure that they all have unique attributes. I've added, I don't know, hundreds of XML tags for buildings. Buildings have had the most.
Nice.
Changes.
Well, so you went and took a Rise of Mankind and tried to make better sense of it, is what you're saying.
Yeah, exactly. I've made a lot of tweaks to it, because the civics aren't very balanced, I don't think. They're really heavily slanted towards Western civics, and, like, you go straight for, you beeline for one set of techs and never try any other strategies. So I try to shake things up, make slavery a viable civic, do a lot of other changes. Spend a lot of time speeding the game up, too, because Rise of Mankind uses something called Python callback.
Oh, yeah.
It slows the game down a ton.
We've had people talking about callbacks before.
Yeah, now,
yeah.
What about the Kale Speed mod greatly reduces the callbacks. Basically, it defaults them to being off unless you actually activate them. So did you speed it up by deactivating most of those?
Yeah, I deactivated most of them, and what they were used for, I moved to them into the SDK. And I also added a bunch more callbacks for things that Fraxis, like, Praxis left a bunch of Python hooks in the SDK, but never let us turn them on or off. So I added off switches for all those and turned them off and speeds the game up a bunch. Because if you're not using them, it's pointless to check that hundreds of times a turn.
That's an innovative idea.
Especially when there's the AIs are crunching along and doing their...
Yeah, there was a couple in the unit AI. This used a lot.
Yeah, you don't really notice it during your turn so much when you're playing, because it's, you know, still you're working at the speed that you're clicking things on. But when that 10 minutes of AI processing comes up, you really notice.
It's hopefully something Sephiroth might fix with the dual core. Perhaps the AI can do some calculations while you do your turn. So perhaps that might make, Rise of Mankind more playable in Sephiroth.
Well, I think Galactic Civilization actually uses some kind of AI thinking during your turn, but I don't know if that could really work in Civilization, because...
It sounds pretty useful.
I'm sorry, what did you say, Cameron?
It sounds pretty useful if you could get the AI to think in your turn, that way you didn't have to wait so long, because humans take the most time. Human turn's always the longest.
Yeah. But there'd always be something like if you're fighting a war, it's like I just moved my tank onto their city and it's like it could totally change everything that they've been thinking about because now they've just lost a city. It's like, oh.
Of course, yeah, that's perhaps why they have four different AI maps. You know, it was strategic, tactical, empire-wide. Perhaps they will code it so that during your turn, the AI will only... decide on its general strategy, and then it will leave the tactical decision making to, you know, the really enter turn. So that way, you know, that's perhaps why they split up the AI in four different parts. Or was it three different parts? I don't know.
But where's that laugh track coming from?
You guys remember that?
Yeah, who's laughing?
Yeah, I don't know.
No.
Are you guys laughing at me?
That goes without saying.
Wait, is it you, Octave?
Are you still working on it right now?
Yeah, I'm in a development cycle right now, so I'm still working on it.
That's good, because, you know, if you've got a mod that's active, you're going to get new content all the time. It's like DLC almost.
Yeah.
It's fun. And then...
Okay, can you tell us about the next feature you plan to implement?
The next feature is a big overhaul of how your economy works in Civilization. Like, you'll be able to establish a state currency as, like, one of your resources. Like, you'll pick a metal that acts as your coin. You'll be able to, like, print money or cause inflation or deflation. And inflation to be a lot more affected based on, like, player actions, whether you're, like, hurrying lots of buildings or in the middle of a war or, like, busy trying to... trade lots of money with other people. So inflation's not... Yeah, go ahead.
So you'll also be able to take loans from other civs?
Yeah, you'll be able to, like, take loans and have interest and...
Okay. That's cool. That allows, you know...
Interest.
Can you issue government bonds?
You'll also be able to issue, like, just general bonds that your people will be able to buy at interest rates.
Wow, so you actually gave Civ an actual economy.
So if you switch to state property, do you lose all your loans?
Juicy macroeconomics there.
If you default on your loans, other players are just going to have negative diplomatic relations with you.
And no more loans.
Yeah, well, they're never going to trade with you again, so...
Yeah, you should have creditworthiness that goes down.
But no, you could do an economic bubble and, like, slang loans at that point, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You're like, hey, I'm going to create an economic bubble.
Yes.
I'm Alan Greenspan. I made all this money.
I'm going to give credit default swaps to all those other players.
The saintly Alan Greenspan.
Yeah, there'll be a little money slider right below your science and culture sliders. And you'll be able to,
oh, that's sick.
You'll be able to increase how much your treasury's printing money or decrease. And yeah, so it'll be pretty awesome.
So you're working on a giant economic system, or is that already partially implemented?
It's a work in progress. I've got, like, half the code for the framework done.
You should release that as a mod comp, too, not just to the kitchen sink. No offense, if you're adding to the kitchen sink, that's such a great feature to get lost with all the other good things.
That'd be more nonsense.
Mod comp that, too, because that's actually very fascinating.
Yeah, I just don't do a lot of mod comps because they're a lot of effort to take the code out and make sure it works. And then if you release it, there's not that many people that actually know how to use the SDK and merge it, so...
Modcast exclusive.
I'm so optimistic about Civ 5, though. With so many fewer units, the AI turn is going to be really short.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, it's one unit per... They made it really... That's a really heavy strategy move to make it like Panzer General.
Of course, on the other hand, the one unit per tile could cause the unit to need to do more checks on where other units are and how it can pass. In Civ 4, it's like, oh, I can just move anywhere I want. I don't even have to think about where
the units are. Get some bottlenecks.
There can be kind
have
of
a unit go from one hex
there.
To another over and over.
Mm-hmm. Now, Civ 4 already has scope to solve such situations. If you're blocking one mountain pass and there's another one nearby, then they will move just the other pass.
Well, you know, remember with hexes, we're losing two directions, too.
True.
And attack you from the backside.
I mean, if you look at it, you could look at it as hex making, and you should gain two directions. Or you can look at a hex as losing two directions. Like, you gain two cardinal directions, but you lose two diagonals.
Well, no, there's no difference between cardinal and ordinal directions anymore. It's definitely fewer directions, and they're all equivalent now, which is the main thing. But, okay, let's not go into that.
Butcher that.
I'm sure Polycast will have, like, whole episodes devoted to nothing to like. But
yeah, but I guess we have a different audience, so no.
Well, you know, anyways, we're figuring out who's going to mod that back into squares.
Good luck with that.
No. What's the interesting mods is going to be the person who tries to create a geodesic sphere out of these hexagons, and there's some interesting threads on that already.
Oh, so like a space mode.
No, not a space mode, a geodesic sphere, as in a round Earth composed of hexagons. Like the thing at Disney.
Well, yeah, it would be zooming out on your Civ map.
Yeah, so basically I'm not going for that. If you're going for hexes, then you know you should go for a sphere right away.
The only problem is that it doesn't work.
Probably hard enough for them to just do the hexes in the first place.
I played a really nice game that was like that called Light of Altair. It's an indie game, and it's a planet development game, and it's a hex spheres for the play map that you zoom in on. So Light of Altair, fun game.
Never heard of it, but of course the only game I've played the last 4 or 5 years, as I know, practically Civ 4.
Yeah, we're doing a lot of Civ 4. We're all kind of burnt out on Civ 4 now, you know, and I'm glad they released Civ 5.
We are?
But, I mean, are you?
They released it already, right?
Well, I'm glad they've announced they're going to release it, so.
As far as I'm concerned, I would have been fine waiting a few more years, but, yeah, I guess we don't get that choice.
Well, I thought we were going to have to wait a few more years, so. But anyways, that's a lot of money. Like, for Axis, they're not slaying
games. Exactly, yeah.
They're going to get a commercial for this, like, Dragon Age Origins, all these big games now have fat-ass commercials on TV.
Yeah, it's because the gaming industry gets bigger and bigger. It's going to advertise more.
I heard
the
game industry made more money than movies or something like that.
Well, it's more revenue. It's not the same thing.
It depends on whether you count the actual sales of the consoles themselves versus just the games, you know?
I don't know. Maybe I'm just spouting gibberish, so who knows?
It's something like $9 billion, last I heard.
It's still a gripping money.
yeah.
And I mean, if you're going to be an evil corporation taking all the money, you might as well be a game corporation that at least entertains people, you know? At least we get something out of it. We get a little box with a disc in there with a possibly playable game.
Depends on the game, I suppose.
We still have to debug it or something.
Yeah.
Fix all the bugs.
We're going to have to.
You know, this actually brings up an interesting point. There was a poll on CFC that's still right up there at the top of the page about the age of people who are waiting to play Civ 5. And it turns out the peak was 26 to 30, fully 24%.
That's actually pretty young, because I thought the age of the average gamer, the average age of the gamer is 35 these days. So that would mean that the Sith Lord is actually younger than average. But you know, that's also an interesting point because because of this average age, I think it's a good decision that the Civ 5 designers finally decided to make, Civ a serious game instead of, with such cartoony graphics. So, big thumbs up to Don Schaefer.
They did this poll on the age of the people for Civ 5 who were expecting it, and they had a link to the exact same type of poll done for Civilization 4 5 years ago. And you can clearly see that everyone, it just moves the whole, group of people, it just moved down 4 years. So it's exactly the same people playing Civ 4 and Civ 5.
So they don't have any new customers?
Well, maybe one or two at the low end of the spectrum, but you can clearly see that the age of Civ 5 players has increased significantly.
The age of Civ Fanatics users has aged. I think that's the thing. And if you were to hold the same poll on Apolloton, it would probably skew about 10, 15 years older, because that site is a lot older. And, same issue. Relatively few new people join. Relatively few people leave. So, it just goes up the average age.
Well, you know what? If Civ 5 is going to do what it says and just link our websites to the game interface, which is what it sounds like, it's going to explode.
Like integrated browser of some sort.
It could just get the websites are already CFC has quite a bit of traffic, and the WePlay Civ is slowly ramping up. That would be a dump load of traffic.
Yeah, that really depends on how Fraxis handles it. Possibly, at this point.
Perhaps another question about Civ 5. Is there any way we can prepare for Civ 5 modding?
Well, just learn C++ is probably the best solution.
And what I need to know is what's the file types we're looking at so I can start gathering the plugins I need.
So you mean the
graphics?
File types? Yeah, there's been no word on that.
Are we doing DDS? Are we back to NIFS? Are we going to something else?
Yeah, that's the sort of information we'll probably only find out very shortly before or even after release.
Well, as soon as it's released, we're going to figure out what their container is, if they're using SPKs or not.
Yeah, they did that for a specific reason for the Civ 4 engine. We don't know if that's going to be the case for Civ 5. So, have you talked about scripting yet? Yeah, it was announced that we're going to Lua scripting now. That's also an interesting development.
Hey Peter, think you're familiar with Lua? Can you give some quick overview? How is the grammar different between Python and Lua? Is it still, if A is true, then do...
I've started to look at Lua as to what it could be like. And from what I understand, it's a little more verbose than Python. It doesn't have that white-based syntax thing that Python has, which, by the way, I think is really one of the greatest features.
Python is pretty much the only language ever that does that.
Yeah, that's very unique to Python. But other than that, it looks broadly similar. You type in and rather than ampersand.
Yeah, if you're a programmer, if you can program one program,
and rather than semicolon,
one C-like program, you can program all C-like programs, and Lua and Java, that's all C-like. So syntax-wise, you're gonna have to get used to it, but it's not gonna be all that different. My understanding is
Now the other thing.
Yeah, go ahead.
It does not appear to have objects in it, which is a major difference between it and Python. Pretty much anything else.
Mm-hmm.
It actually supports more functional programming, which you'd have to... if you actually know what functional programming is, then you don't even need my help.
Nope. I also don't know what an object
but
is.
But for most of you out there, functional programming is like voodoo programming. Let me just, put it in. Functional programming is not just functions, because it definitely has functions. So I'm just saying functional programming is this really crazy voodoo type of programming.
Yeah, it's more, sort of more mathematical almost.
Interesting.
Yeah, are you familiar with Lisp? No, of course you're not, Tony. What am I even asking you for? Sorry.
Oh, come on, man. Don't be a hater.
But it is more heavily based on functions, where in theory Python is more based on objects, although I haven't seen much Python code that was actually object-based heavily.
I took one semester of coding, so that's it.
I took zero.
Okay.
I've written some code. But it's very, very hard and stressful to do it in school.
I think really the most important difference that I'm aware of, and I haven't done a whole lot of research, but is that Lua is a lot less, a lot more lightweight. It's not so much a drain of the system, so you're going to have less of the issues than we have with SIP4. If you have too many hooks, that is really going to be a major issue.
Yeah, that's supposed to be a good point. Also, from the general I've seem to be seeing is that Lua is actually getting more popular for games, and Python is starting to lose out. You're getting less games that have Python in them.
I think Lua has always been the more popular of the two, but yeah, that's definitely, it's very popular for games. I'm not sure, yeah, other than it being lightweight, I'm not sure what the main difference
yeah.
is.
Yeah, well, Lua is actually a very new programming language from what I understand. It was actually created in Brazil.
Yes, it means moon in Brazil.
Yes, in Portuguese. They're not Brazilian.
But, yeah, no, sorry.
I think it only dates to like the early 90s when it was created. So it's a very new programming language in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah, something like that.
It's like older than SIP2.
Depends on what you're used to, I suppose. I mean, Java is even newer than that, so
yeah.
It depends on what's
and
new.
And C++++? You know, that little sign that we're saying.
C-sharp is even newer. Yeah, that's a really new language, but yeah, nobody's using that well, we're not using it for SIP5. I actually think Python is probably not that different either. It's probably 90s, maybe 80s.
Yeah, I thought Python was at least written in the 80s. It took a long time for it to catch on, I mean.
Wikipedia says 1991, so it's not that different.
So anyway, my recommendation would be for modders, you know, I actually hope to make a Steeds of Greatness mod, if Paul Colvin allows me to use his title. Now for an ancient Mediterranean mod, and I have already assembled some lists of potential tech names and you know, building names. So that's something you can do in advance if you're hoping to make a Civ 5 mod. You know, design a tech tree in advance.
Yeah.
But for dress, actual coding isn't really possible yet, of course.
Well, a lot of the modding, like when last version of Second Revolution I didn't quite finish, I had pages and pages of penciled notes that I had to write.
Some people say you have to design by iteration, but, you know, I actually prefer to have a master plan in advance. So, and just like Tony, I prefer to have notes in advance. I had that for Smaniac, you know, that Smack mod. And so I made that, you know, I had really everything written out in words in advance. And I didn't do that for Planetfall because, you know, I joined an existing team. And as a consequence, it took like 2 years before, you know, the game was in a really playable state. So, you know, because of that experience, I still, you know, I maintain that, you know, doing, you know, writing everything down in advance as much as possible is really the way to go.
And paper can last a lot longer than data, I've noticed.
No paper? Okay.
Except for fire, but fire will ruin data too.
But, you know, you've got your kids to warn against fire.
I mean, the thing about modding is you are modding to a game, to a target platform. I don't know how much modding you can do before Civ 5 is even out. You want to play the main game a little bit first. I mean, see how that affects gameplay, one unit per turn. Gonna get a feel for that, and then you can really start modding.
I mean, it's actually the more radical
you... Civ 4 mod is going to be fundamentally different from a Civ 5 mod.
Well, I heard you can use any square around your city, like to 3 squares distance, but when your culture expands, you only expand one hex a time.
This means that your cities will be a little bit larger, and that you can, you know, add a little bit more buildings that give happiness. But, you know, for the rest, that isn't really a dramatic change to economy, I feel. I don't know.
Yeah, that's the problem. You don't really know. You really only know that sort of thing once you've actually played a game. I mean, before Civ 4...
Exactly. And not only that, you need to play like 3 games.
Yeah, that might be enough. But you do want to get a feel, how does this actually work in practice? And the thing is, with Civ 4, I mean, one of the most important elements of Civ 4 economy is slavery. And that's something that we had no idea about before the game came out.
You can just mod that away. I did that for Planetfall.
You can, but yeah, I mean, it is a very important element in Civ 4.
But the slavery is stemming from Civ 3, so I don't think slavery was entirely new. I mean, I think communism in Civ 3 or something wasn't...
I mean, I didn't play a lot of Civ 3, but whipping was, to me, it was a completely new concept that I had to get used to and, you know, figure out how I'm going to incorporate that in my mod ideas, etc.
Exactly. Well, you know, I mean, the sky's the limit here, and And I'm really want to start modding again. So I'm actually thinking about building a new team, and because we really need to get a mod out there, and I have some great new ideas on some mods already, you know.
Paste mods.
Yeah, we've got some great new ideas for Civ 5. I want to hear what Cameron thinks. I want to hear what he has to say about Civ 5, what he thinks about it.
I can't wait for Civ 5. I'm going to mod that. The second Civ 5 comes out, I'm going to drop Civ 4 and move over to Civ 5.
I wonder how many people you think will do that. Do you think that's going to be the overwhelming majority of Civ 5, Civ 4 modders will go over?
Look at Civ 3, though. There's still some people who mod Civ 3, which is...
I think it may depend.
Yeah, but...
Yeah, it's a really small minority. And it's mostly artists.
But they are a minority. They get front page space at CFC.
Yeah, rightly so. I mean, there needs to be a place for them.
3 and Civ 4. Someone who knew how to mod Civ 3, their skills didn't transfer over to Civ 4 very well. Because...
Not one bit.
So those people were more like trapped in Civ 3 rather than choosing to stay there.
But I have a feeling that Civ 4 modder is going to have no problem. Oh, look what it says here. It says here that Firaxis has confirmed they're going to be putting effort into a world builder. So they might be doing all the work for us, for those who've done interfaces for Civ 4 tools.
But world builder is like a map. It's the thing that lets you make maps.
Yeah.
Well, no, but they're saying they're putting stuff into it, because the Civ 4 World Builder, you know, if you've ever used it, is a piece of freaking dog poop.
I never got into it very much. I never liked to really make maps, so...
I have to touch up. You have to use it to do a mod if you have a static map.
It really sucks, because you can't load a map without starting some stabilizations on it. So if you want to make a map without fixed starting positions, you basically have to remove those shifts every time you make a single change.
And oh, I know, it's stupid.
So, you know, basically I'm forced now to open, start the game, look at the coordinates of the plot I want to change, and then open the World Builder text file and do it manually. That's actually less time-consuming than a...
Yeah.
No, removing.
Exactly.
Removing all the sys again.
Most of the work in the world builder you want to do in the text file itself, yeah. Hopefully they can reduce some of the strain there. You can do more in the game.
Mm-hmm. That'd be good.
I do remember some people made a nice tool for taking a actual grayscale map and somehow converting it into...
Not grayscale, dog. Use color code on that. That's BMP to WBS script. It's a Python script.
It's actually made by Rye.
Yeah, and the ability to actually stretch a map. So, like, if I design something, and then I just want to actually, in the world builder, without having to actually create an entire new map, just say double the size, double the width, and double the height of that thing.
Yeah, I mean, and I could come up with a wish list of 50 things I would want from basically a world builder like that.
But are we searching the sky, you know, because how much of that are they actually going to put in, you know?
Yeah, that's sort of a thing.
This is three world building. Had a lot of tools.
And John Schaefer we trust.
But yeah, we need to know exactly how much are they going to put into that world builder.
Yeah, it's definitely interesting to see.
So there's going to be a lot of speculation. And another thing is, I want to get some feedback. I want to let everyone know, who's listeners, to come post in our threads when we post a new episode. I want to start including some of the feedback that we get from you into our shows as a mailbag or something, and I think that'll help promote people to wanting to, well, you know, you can just talk smack to us, send death letters, that's fine too, just as long as we get to read them out loud. But I think that's going to be fun, and there's going to be some new threads with, we want to start getting some ideas on Civ 5 modding, some speculation going.
Yeah, you like gossip.
Yeah, exactly. And
yeah, there was a really good thread on a religion mod, because people have heard that religion's not going to be in the game, and so immediately everyone's like, oh my god, I want religion back!
Yeah.
But of course, you know, making a religion mod kind of a little tricky, you know, as to not be that ridiculously offensive with them. So I've been trying to steer this thread towards, you know, having the player assign effects for religions in-game rather than having hard-coded, so it's not like, oh, Jews get +1 gold, you know, it's like, oh, no, bad idea, you know, it's like, everyone's coming along, it's like, oh, and then another one person will post, oh, I think the Islam should get +10% attack power, it's like, no, you idiots, you know, it's like,
that's the problem with religion.
That would never freaking fly, you know.
I've avoided religion purposely because of that.
And then someone else pops in and says, you realize Lutheranism was the inspiration for
social values.
I'm like, no!
You know, like in Sith 2, temples and cathedrals.
Well, I mean, you can have temples and cathedrals. You don't have to have them associated with a religion. You just have a fucking temple. Don't even have to mention religion, but it can be there. You know, there'll be pictures of gods in the middle of the temples, or there'll be a medieval picture with a cathedral with a cross on it, or whatever. Just, you know, imagery is there. Just don't have to game code it. I'm going to miss the mechanic, though, because that kind of, if you take apart religion while you're modding, you can kind of turn it into other things like ideology, or even you can change it to many other ways to use that mechanic in Civ 4. So, my question is, we might be gaining a little equality, but are we losing a great mechanic?
Yeah, I know. Actually, they said they removed it because it made diplomacy worse, but I think it made diplomacy
yeah.
better. Because, you know, you actually had ways to make another Sith your friend. Now they have removed that. How can you still make another Sith your friend? That's what I'm worried about.
Well, I think you just have to bribe them with goodies now, you know. Rather than, well, but I think that I can see the angle that it was completely determinative.
Yeah, I think that was really the issue, yeah. The impact was too
strong. It's like, oh, we're the same religion, we love you, you know, or, oh, we're different, we hate
that. But that means that now it will be
completely random. The replacement will be city-state.
It's have to be determined.
No conflict will be about who are your city-state allies.
No, city-states will create conflicts between cities. But what
will the research, you research together, you don't trade texts anymore.
Exactly.
So.
Yeah,
but still, you know, that's still random. To start a research pact, you already have to be a friend with
random, though.
So, you know,
there's trade, too. I mean, if you have some kind of mutually beneficial, we both get some little bit of extra gold from trade, that's always something people like to do.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll see. We need to find out. I mean, how radical is the design going to be? Because, you know, a whole bunch of systems could be just dismissed. You know, with just saying, well, that's just how it is, and we're not worried about that, you know? I don't know. It's a big question mark.
And if they're willing to take, you know, things like hexes and, you know, the religion out, I mean, it seems like, you know, almost anything is potentially on the cutting block here.
Yeah, I agree 100%. Like, we don't know how much they have changed because, I mean, no Civ game has ever been in hexes as far as I know. I think it's always been squares, hasn't it?
Yeah,
diamonds.
Always been squares. Yeah, diamonds are, you know, basically the same.
Yeah. Squares and diamonds.
I'm not sure. If that in itself, I mean, it looks visually looks different. We don't know how big the impact on gameplay can be. I think the one unit per tile is going to be a far bigger thing than, oh, it's hexes now.
That's Panzer General rules now. That the battles are going to be like Panzer General. Just watch.
They could leave some things the same, though. Resources are still pretty similar.
Really? I thought there was something different with resources,
We have quantified resources now. If you have 6 iron, you can build 6 swordsmen and not an infinite amount. So that's a pretty big change.
I'm pretty sure that only applies to strategic ones, like iron and copper. It doesn't apply to, like, dye or stuff like that.
Yeah, we don't really know, really, what the effect there is. So, yeah, that's one of those things. Either we have to wait for more information.
It would kind of be a pain in the ass to assign dye to each individual city you want to make happy with it.
That's a big question mark. We don't know how that's going to work yet.
But I know people have made mods kind of that were along those lines. I mean, I remember some people made like a fuel mod that you had to turn oil into fuel, and then you had so many units of fuel that you could use to run your mechanized warfare units.
Oh, yeah.
So everything's been done before. It's just, is their implementation of it going to be better, which it almost certainly isn't.
Oh, I mean, it remains to be seen. I think Civilization IV will go into history as an absolute classic game. I mean, it's such a perfect game almost.
Of course it won't.
It remains to be seen if Civ 5 will be better. I think the main thing is it will be different. But yeah, it's going to be hard to come up with.
It's hard to top.
Lots of questions. More questions than answers.
Yeah. But of course, one can never know both the questions and the answers. Or the universe would end.
I think they need to make those hex lines optional.
Oh, I'm sure they
I've seen graphics without them, so.
In fact, there are screenshots without them already, so we know they are.
Oh, okay, good, because I don't like them.
Call in today. In North America, the number is 301-637-7659. That's 301-637-POLY. In Europe, 44121-288.
7659. That's 44121288 Pauly. You can Skype us at The Paulycast or email us at thepaulycast@gmail.com.
The only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about.
For more information on Modcast,
Revcast, or
Paulycast, or about Paulycast in general, log on to the series' official website at thepaulycast.net. This is just going to be one big senseless jumble of ideas, okay? Yeah, so this episode's not going to make any sense. It's Modcast.
We can make it 2 hours.
When you come up with a name, what are we going to call the episode? I was going to say, what should we call this episode?
We can make it a two-parter.
Oh, no, I'm not really
No. Okay. Well, you know, I think I'd just go with Life, the Universe, and Civilization 5.
Yeah, that's
I like
one.
That one. I think we're... That's... Vote. It's done. That's the episode. Well, today we have been...
And, well, wait, someone still needs to drop their fish.
Oh, well, wait till we're done with the thingy. So, I'll let you do it. Today, we have been joined with Kenneth Impaler WRG Steenbeaker.
Wow, okay. Sorry. Oh, yes.
Furl
I missed my line? Okay, so long, and thanks for all the fish.
All right, today we've been joined with Kenneth Impaler WRG Furland.
Bye.
Wouter Lacutus Snyders.
Goodbye.
Peter Maniac Steenbeaker.
So long, and thanks for all the fish.
And me, Tony Garrett, as I kill goodbye. With our special first-time guest co-host, Cameron Aforis McAvoy.
It's great to be here.
Oh, I'm glad you came on. It was a blast. I had a blast with you on. So we'll see you guys in some indeterminate time at some indeterminate place at some undetermined mind state. Goodbye.
An undetermined restaurant at the end of the universe.
Civilization 4 Warlords Beyond the Sword Sound Clips Copyright Take 2 Interactive Copyright 2010 Civilized Communications at civcom.net